All right, I am really excited. I'm very thrilled. I've been looking forward to this for a long, long time. But I would venture to say that I am probably more nervous than you are being here. I've done this at other congregations, but I think a lot of this particular group. I've lived in the North, well, technically, more of my life than I lived in the South. However, I am from the Houston area. I spent all of my middle school and high school years in this area. I probably know many of your parents because we used to play together when we were little. So, and while I will not, I went to Florida College myself with Jeff. Jeff and I went to Florida College together. I am related to Heidi. I don't claim David, but I'm related to Heidi. She is my wife's aunt, but I'm so thrilled that I am here and I get to spend this time with you guys. If you're sitting in the back, just know I call on the back first and work my way forward. We're going to spend some time discussing different things, and I really do hope it's a discussion. I hope it's something that happens to where we are having an interaction about what the Bible says on certain things, what we say about certain things, our opinions. It's okay to talk about our opinions right now, but we're going to go to the Bible for all of the different things that we're going to talk about. I do also want to say, I've got stuff that I'm prepared to talk about, but I really want to know what you are feeling. I really want to know what you are thinking on these subjects. So I am not going to treat any question like it's silly. I'm not going to judge any question that you ask. I'm not going to be shocked. I and none of us are going to think, oh, I know why they asked that question. Did they ask that question? Because that's really what they're, we don't know why people are asking questions. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's something that you're struggling with. But I want to say, I'll go there with you this week. Now, it might be something where I say, hey, let's talk about this over here. And I'd be happy to sit and we'll talk about this. But if you want to go there, I'm willing to go there with you with whatever question you have. I can't guarantee I'm going to give you an answer that satisfies you. But I can guarantee that I'll listen, I won't judge, and I'll point to the Bible for wherever I'm going for what the Bible says. So I wanted to make sure that I said that. How successful this weekend goes is going to be a lot about how well we are able to have a discussion back and forth about the topic. So I hope that you are comfortable with just kind of tossing out ideas and questions and such. All right? We good with that? Good, thank you. I saw some nods. There was some kind of movement above the neck, and that made me feel good that people are alive. All right, so one of the things that I've got to lay out first at the beginning, and it has to make sense for the whole weekend to make sense, and that is the fact that I am a huge nerd. Whatever you can do to escape, I am into that. I am into that. My first love is comic books. Comic book readers, you like the superheroes comic book readers? Listen, I'm a proud comic book nerd, but if you want to, like, yeah, me too, Josh, right? I'm not going to let everybody know, but then I know. But Star Wars, Star Trek, Dungeons and Dragons, not so much the anime, unless we're talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender. I think that is an amazing cartoon. That's one of the best of all times. But anything that we can do to escape and just kind of geek out, I love that. I am all there. And you might be saying to yourself, I also like these things, but I don't know where I fall. Look at the Venn diagram. All right? And you can decide yourself, am I a geek, a nerd, a dork, or a dweeb? All right? If you think you have high intelligence but low social skills, that kind of means you're a dweeb. But if you have high intelligence, some social ineptitude, and an obsession about something, that's your nerd. That's where I fall in, right there in the middle. So you can just look at that and you can decide, okay, I don't know where I fall, but I'm somewhere here. But this week, take the picture. Yeah, we all like that. I'll send that to you later if you want. That's where you fall. Where do you fall on the Venn diagram? But this weekend, This weekend, we are going to be talking about origin stories. And when I throw out the phrase origin story, what are some things that come to mind? This is the part where I'd love to get some feedback. When I say origin story, what do you think of? Batman. There's definitely. The first movie, no matter what we're talking about, if there's a series, the very first movie is usually that origin story. Yeah. Ooh, a lot. Listen, you got to have heartbreak in that origin story, right? Whether they go villain or whether they go hero, there's always some kind of tragedy. Yeah. A creation or an event behind something. Yes, sir. A book. A lot of times there's an origin story. It's a story, right? So we have origin stories, and that explains so much about the character, right? If you understand the origin story of a character, you understand why that character acts the way that they do, right? I have this poster on my wall in my church building office. But with great power comes great responsibility. If you know Spider-Man's origin story, you know why this means so much to him. If you know Batman's origin story, you know why he doesn't like to use guns. Right? Do you know why he calls it the precious? If you know Gollum's origin story, you understand that. Even stuff like Harry Potter. Why does the guy with no nose hate the little boy in the glasses? That goes back to the origin story. Even stuff like King Arthur. There's an origin story there. And when you understand the origin story, you understand everything else about that character so much better. So, the question that we're going to spend some time looking at is our origin story. Humanity's origin story. Where do we go for our origin story? Where? The Bible. Where in the Bible? Genesis. Genesis is out. Good job, by the way. Excellent job. This week, if I say where in the Bible and you just say Genesis, you got an 80% chance of being right. All right, so play the numbers. If I say who, answer Jesus. If I say where in the Bible, say Genesis, play in the numbers. You're going to do great this weekend. But Genesis, and there's a lot of things that we can learn. I want us to really understand there are so many answers about life that we can find if we'll just go back to our origin story. Specifically Genesis chapters 1 through 11, that's kind of the operating system for the rest of the Bible. Did you know that there is as much time soaked up in Genesis 1 through 11 than there is as the rest of the Bible? Genesis 1 through 11 has as much time in it as Genesis 12 through Revelation. Anything that God lays out in the first 11 chapters is just, he just kind of recreates it or restates it after that. Everything that he wants us to know about who he is, who we are, what we're supposed to be doing in this world, the better we understand Genesis, the better we understand our origin story, the better we're going to understand what God wants for us for the rest of our lives. Every major debate that is happening in culture right now, you go back to the examples, the commands, or the principles laid out in Genesis, that'll help you decide where we're supposed to stand, where God wants us to stand on this particular debate. And I'm serious, anything that's being debated right now about, well, this is right, or actually, this is justice, or that's justice. What does Genesis say? God's already laid it out. So for this first session, I just want to focus on one thing. And it might seem like a duh, Josh, kind of question, but I really think it's one that we got to spend some time talking about. I just want to look at our author. And I'm going to admit, my lessons this week are going to be aimed more if you're already a believer. The lessons this weekend are not designed to make you convicted about something. But if you are a believer, if you do believe in these things then that we read in Genesis 1 through 11, this this will help us to really think more deeply about what God wants from us to do. So, yeah, let's start with that first question. Again, who is our author? Yeah, I know. Kind of a duh one, right? Because our author identifies himself in the very first verse. Open up Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1. I'll bet most of you could quote it if you spent any amount of time in a Bible class, but I want you to be looking at this. If you have a Bible, if it's a hard copy, if you've got it on your phone, if you've got it electronically, turn over there, scroll over there, hit the tab, whatever you need to do. Genesis 1:1. Who's got it and can read it for us in a big voice? I saw Mark's hand first.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
That's it. The very first line, our author identifies himself. I also want to say this. Side note. I'm going to work really hard on learning people's names, but I'm really bad at it. So I might ask you several times what your name is. However, if I already know what your name is, your percentages of me calling on you have just gone up a lot. Or me just calling on you whether you raised your hand or not, if I happen to know your names. But I want to learn everybody's name. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Zoe. Everybody's name. I want to learn before it's over. But God created the heavens and earth. Jump down to verse 27. You don't have to read it, but tell me, what's that the creation of? Man, thank you. I know it's a late night, but we got to get there. We'll get there. Man, God created man in whose image? His own image. We can look at chapter 2. God made man from the dust of the ground. He saw that it was good, but he wasn't good that he was alone. So he formed a woman. And then all throughout the Psalms, the prophets, God talks, is described as the creator of all. Jump over in your Bibles to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, if you got a Bible. And I need somebody in a loud voice to read 19 and 20. Romans chapter 1, 19 and 20. Who's got it? I saw your hand first, sir. Big voice. All right, cool verses. What's this mean? He did a great job reading it for us. Why am I picking out this verse to talk to us about the author of our origin story? What is Paul saying here? Anybody got an idea? Anybody try to explain it? Zoe? We should be able to look around. It's not a brother-sister competition. I want you to know that right now. But it's tied. We should be able to look around. You should be able to go through nature and look around and go, this isn't an accident. There's a reason that we are here. You should be able to look at nature, and it should. We've got no excuse for not believing in some kind of creator. So I want to look. Okay, so let's look deeper. Now, we've already said who our author is. Who's our author? All right. Who's our author? Very good. All right, good. Just wanted to hear some more voices this time. So let's talk about what that means. What does it mean if I really believe that God is the author of my story? I mean, I want to ask you, what does that mean for me? God is the author of my story. What's coming to your mind, Melody? He's the author of my story. He gets to make the rules. All right, I like that. Anything else? He's the author of my story. What does that mean? She said what I was going to say. Yes, sir, in the back. It's planned. Listen, if you're going to write, an author has got to spend time planning something, right? There is a plan. Can you look at Genesis and tell that there's some kind of plan in place when you read it? Yeah, it was not just like, I'm going to throw a God grenade and see what happens. That is not what happened. There is a plan. There is an order. Yeah, Mark.
You can't deny that there is a God or an author.
Yeah, you cannot deny that. Why? Why do you think you can't deny that there is an author? Even because a lot of people do. A lot of people do.
In the case of an author, a book doesn't write itself.
A book does not write itself. Even if you ask ChatGPT to help you, there's still some kind of intelligence. Don't act like y'all ain't already been using that for some of your papers. I won't tell your parents, I promise. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Absolutely. Even though we're all looking at Genesis, but the Bible as a whole, did that all happen like in the space of 2 weeks? Anybody know how long it took to write the Bible? A while. Yes. Excellent. Bonus points. So there's other guys like, fine, carry the one. 1,500 years. 1,500 years is about how long it took the Bible to be written. And it's one story from beginning to end. The planning, the precision that it would have for that. All right, so I want to move on now. But excellent. Thank you for the feedback. I want to get more. There are three things, though, that I want to spend the rest of this session kind of talking about. And here's the first one. And that since God is the author, that means God is the world builder. Anybody know what I mean by world builder? All right. I'm not going to say, has anybody ever heard of Minecraft? I'm not going to ask that to this group. All right. My six-year-old knows what that is. And I want to build this world. And if you build the world, that means there's things that you set up. That's why magic at Hogwarts doesn't work like magic in Middle Earth, right? The Force is not the same as the magic in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Those are all of those things work differently. Why? Why doesn't magic at Hogwarts look the same as magic in Middle Earth? Each what now? Each magic system was set up and who set up that magic system? The author. The author said, this is how I want magic to look in this world. All right? Rowling decided one thing. Tolkien decided another thing. Lucas decided another thing. Stan Lee decided another thing. And magic is going to look different. So this should make sense. If we're world building, I get to decide how something works. And our universe works because that's how God set it up. And what do we often call the laws by which the universe works? There is something that you study at school that explains this. Science. God set up the laws of science because it's his world. And he has said, this is how I want my world to function. He has set up the laws of that. He built the world that we live in, and we are just characters in a story that he wrote. And God is a very particular kind of author. We've already talked about this a little bit. Some of you have already picked up on this, showing how brilliant you are without even being here, but I still want you to come back tomorrow. God is an author of order and design. Order and design. We've already talked about the planning that it takes to organize this world. And here's the reason why this is so important, guys. Whether or not you understand what I'm talking about, I want you to put this in the back of your head. If you're taking notes, I see some of you taking notes. I think that's fantastic. Here's what I want you to write down. One of the marks of God is orderliness. One of the marks of God is orderliness. By that I mean, when God gets involved, chaos becomes order. Look at Genesis chapter 1 again. Look at Genesis chapter 1, all right? Look at verse 9. Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place. Let the dry land appear. Right there, he was going on and on. He would keep reading about this process, and he does it in an orderly and designed ways. He makes habitats, and then he fills up those habitats. On day 4, the sun, the moon, the stars, he fills the expanse. On day 5, the fish and the birds come. Day 6, the land animals come. Man finally fills up God's creation. His creation has a design and an order to it. And it's beyond this, guys. When we go throughout the Bible, we see God is a designer. He's a planner. When he gets involved, he brings order to chaos. When the people come out of Egypt, when the nation of Israel comes out of Egypt, you know, they're not even a nation. At the beginning of the Exodus, they're described as a mixed multitude in Exodus chapter 12. Just a mess. Just this amoeba of people leaving Egypt. But God brings them to Sinai, and now he makes them a nation in chapter 20. He gives them a law. He brings order to them. And then when he tells them to worship, when God tells us to worship, he does not say just kind of do whatever you feel is worship. God is a God of order and design. He gives them a tabernacle. He specifically tells them how to worship in an orderly manner. You know, if you turn to Numbers chapter 2, you can read that even their camp is organized. If you read in there, he's like, all right, I want these tribes on the north, these tribes on the south, these tribes on the east, these tribes on the west, around Sinai. God is even specific. Hey, when it's time to leave, I want you guys to leave in this order. God is a God of order and design. When they get to Canaan, it's not a mad dash to see who gets what land first. God says, you tribe, you take this land, you take this land, you take this land. God, I really want us to know this. Keep it in the back of your head, because this is a lesson that's going to come up as you mature and you go other places and you see what's happening in other places you might go to worship. When God gets involved, it's actually orderly. It's not chaotic. That is a mark of God. Thoughts or comments on anything that I've been talking about so far?
No, Josh, you're amazing.
Thank you. That's awesome. I think you guys are awesome too. But let's move on. All right, we'll move on to the next thing. Since God is the author, since God is the world builder, then the next point ought to make sense. Again, this is something you guys have already kind of picked up on, but truth, I've already said that. I made you guys write that down, and I had it on the screen. All right, that's coming out of my pay. But here's the next thing. Truth comes from the authors, not the characters. Ever since I was little, I've done a lot of writing. I have not just made my own characters. I've not just made my own superheroes. I have been known to create maps of the fictional lands I've created. Yeah, I'm that guy as well. And I can remember one time I was writing this story about a wizard named Horatio. And I was spending all this time deciding what the world was gonna look like for Horatio, what the big bad is gonna look like for Horatio, and I was coming right to the climax. And I was sitting there and I was writing, typing away furiously, typing, yeah, because I was an adult. Typing away furiously about what Horatio was gonna do, and then I heard a voice say, "I don't like that." And I started looking at it like, I don't want to do that. And I looked down at my screen, and it was Horatio talking to me. And Horatio said, "I don't like it. I don't want to do that. I'd rather do this instead." Does anybody believe that that actually happened? No. If you do, there's a different class later on for you, and there's a doctor involved. But because that doesn't happen, the characters don't get to dictate to the author about what reality is, about what truth is. Luke Skywalker doesn't get to decide how the Force works. Magic in Middle-earth doesn't look like magic in Hogwarts. We've already said that because those worlds were created by different people. Harry Potter doesn't get to look at Gandalf and go, well, he's got a big staff. I don't want a wand, I want a staff. In fact, I don't want any sticks, but I still want magic. Harry Potter doesn't get to do that because his world builder, his author, dictated what reality is. Do you see where I'm going with this? If we are the characters in the story, we don't get to tell the author how the world works. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? If Harry Potter wants the benefits of all of the good things magic can do for him, he has to access that magic by the laws that the author set up. You're going to hear people in this world say, hey, live your truth. You live your truth. But if we're created beings, does that guarantee that my truth is the truth? It's like a character in the book deciding how the plot should be different. The character in the plot doesn't get to do that. Only the author gets to dictate these things. And it's easy for us to recognize that God is the author. Sure, right? Everybody on board with that? We've been saying it from the beginning. Who's our author? All right, God. All right, yes, God is our author. So that's easy to understand. But what gets really hard is when we rephrase it to say, that means I am not the author. It's different. It can be really hard for us to recognize that, but he dictates reality. He sets reality. He establishes truth. You know, there's so many times where we can take the word truth and just substitute the word reality, and it means the same thing. If you're trying to decide what truth is, you're trying to decide what reality is. God created reality and we didn't. Why? Because he's the author. You know what? If I take the word author, I can put a little, what do we call it, a suffix? That's the thing at the end of the word, right? The suffix. Thank you, grammar nerds. See, I knew there were more nerds in here. If I can put a little suffix at the end of author to show somebody who has power. I can take this author, and what word can I turn it into? Authority. The author has the authority that is built into the concept of creation. Are some of you surprised by that? Some of you like, whoa, I didn't catch that. Yeah, author, authority, it's there. If you look again at Genesis, you see the logical conclusions. The author has this authority in all of these verses. For us to argue with God that we disagree with his reality, it's just as foolish as Horatio trying to speak up to me from the keyboards to say that he argues with me. Does that at least make sense, what I'm trying to say? Thoughts or comments? Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Josh. Or what about this? No? All right, I see some thumbs up. I'll go with that. Turn to Isaiah chapter 45. The prophet Isaiah kind of puts it this way. Isaiah chapter 45, verse 9. Who's got it for us? Ooh, new person. Yay. What's your name, dear? Corinne. Yes, I'm sorry, Corinne. I already learned your name and then forgot it. It's because I'm old. But Corinne, Isaiah 45 and verse 9, big voice.
Woe to him who strives with his maker, let the potsherd strive
with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him who forms it, what are you making? Or shall your handiwork say, he who has no hand? All right, so there is some clay and there is somebody that's making the pots. Which are we? We're the pots. We're the clay. Who's the person making the pots? Good job. Oh, that was good. That was good. That was said with confidence. That makes me feel good about that. But yeah, God, and so does the, what is this, what actually, I'll ask you, what is this verse saying? What is this verse saying? Yes, sir. The pot doesn't get to decide how the pot is made. The pot doesn't get to look at the sculptor and go, you know, I know you put a handle here, but really I think there should be a handle here. I just would prefer it that way. The pot, the clay doesn't get to do that. Yes, sir. God does not wake up every day and go, how can I make their lives miserable today? We may not understand, we may not like, but God is a faithful God who is doing things for our best interest. I don't understand why he wants me to do this, but I'm supposed to, and I need to trust that faithful God. Thank you very much. All right. Thinking that you know more about truth or justice or right or wrong, thinking that you understand reality better than God, that is the basis for all sin. I'm gonna say that again. Thinking that you know truth or reality or justice better than God is the basis for all sin. Isn't that what happened to Adam and Eve? What was the one rule? What was the one rule for Adam and Eve? Don't eat. Look at, oh, we got all these beautiful trees here, any kind of fruit that you want, all these wonderful things. It's always the nice weather. You guys don't have to worry about getting sunburned. Everything is taken care of. Oh, wait, there's one tree. Just don't eat from that one tree. That's the only rule. Well, I disagree, God. That's the basis of sin. And what happened to them as a result of that? What now? Life got real hard. That's exactly right. Life got real hard as a result. Let's look at Romans chapter 1 again, all right? In Romans chapter 1, Paul is talking about a society that knows God, but they're not honoring him as God. Sure, I acknowledge that there might be a God that exists, but that doesn't mean he gets to run my life. They're not honoring him as God. They're disregarding reality. They're fighting God on reality. And then God finally says, fine. You want to live that way? You go ahead. I'm going to let you, but please don't mistake that for acceptance. Romans chapter 1, look at verse 24. Therefore God gave them up to the lust of their hearts, to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves. Why? Because they exchanged the truth about God. What is, how does yours read? They exchanged the truth about God for what? Mine says a lie. Yeah, they exchanged that for a lie, and they worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator. That's it. They were arguing with God about reality. He's the creator. He has the authority. He sets the limits. Who is currently learning how to drive or already is driving? Great. That's the best participation I've had so far. All right, but imagine that you're driving down the highway, driving down Louetta, wherever you happen to drive, and then all of a sudden, all of the lines on the road disappear. The limits are gone. You're free to go wherever you want on that road. Do you think that would add to more freedom or more chaos? Chaos. Those limits are there to keep you safe. And removing those limits that the authority set on the road, if I'm removing those limits, that is chaos. Tell me, would you feel safer or more scared if those lines weren't on the road? Yeah, it'd be a lot more scary. I would certainly be more scared. And not, I mean, I know how some of you guys drive already. Even with the lines, it's scary. But without the lines, it would be terrifying. There was a hand over here. Yes, sir. Even without the lines, there's still consequences for our actions, right? If the lines are gone and I happen to crash into somebody and I stand before a judge and I say, yeah, but there were no lines. You still killed somebody with your car. And there's consequences for your actions. That's a great, great point. That's a great, great point. All right. He's our author. He's our authority. He tells me by the laws that I get to live by. Here's the last thing that we're going to talk about, and that's what we already said. Chaos happens when we try to take away the pen from God. God's the author. We try to grab the pen, take it away from him. Chaos happens every time. How did Adam and Eve try to be the author of their story? Eve ate the fruit. Why? Yes, sir. Absolutely. They sinned. God said, don't do this. They did it. It was a sin. But they were trying to write their own story.
The exact words of what Satan said to them while trying to get them to eat the fruit was that they will be like God.
Yes. Satan said, you will be like God. Ooh, you get to be like the author. But did God ever really say that? No. And we're going to get to this in a later session. But how did Satan lie to them by saying, hey, if you eat this, you will be like God? How is that already a lie? They could eat other fruit too, but God has no sin. You can't be like God. But there's already a lie built in. If you eat this fruit, you get to be like God. They're already like God. How? They're made in his image. If you eat this, you will be like God. It was already a lie. They didn't recognize already what they had. Trying to take the pen. All right, so when God sets up something, we got to follow it. We need to follow his script. We need to follow his design. And when we go back to Genesis, there's so many things that we see his design in. When he set up the family, what is a family supposed to look like? Genesis 1, 2, and 3, he set it up. He had leadership roles and supportive roles, equal in importance, but still kind of distinct. And so when it comes to something like the family and marriage, we got to follow how the author set it up. When you get to the New Testament, he set up his church in a certain way. The local church is organized. It's designed to go according to the author's plan. He had a plan for what was supposed to be, and we got to follow his design. If we try to take the pen away from him, it's going to be chaos. He is the author, and we are not. Okay? If you're taking notes, this is the big thing that I want you guys to walk away with from this first session. Here's the big thing I want you to walk away with. God is the author of our story. He defines truth and reality and purpose, not us. Our identity, our morality, the direction all begin with understanding the creator. When we try to rewrite the story, we end up lost. This is the big takeaway I hope that you guys will come from our... It's easy to understand that God is the author. What that means for my life, that's what we spend the rest of our life trying to figure out. Thoughts or comments on anything that we've been saying, questions, pushback, disagreements... I'm willing to listen to those too. Oh, you're going to disagree? No, I'm kidding. What? What is it?
Aren't we technically still the author of our story because we decide our actions?
Okay, great question. She said, aren't we technically the author of our story because we get to decide our actions? Do we have such a thing as free will? All right. I have free will. Does that mean that I get to say what truth is? Truth is how the author set it up. We might think of our story more like a choose-your-own-adventure. Are those still around? Are those still a thing? Choose-your-own-adventure books? All right. When I was little, those were really big. And, you know, if you would like to fight the dragon, turn to page 64. If you'd like to run away like a little baby, turn to page 72. And then you'd go and you had a choice about which way you wanted to go. But there was still a predetermined ending, depending upon which way you chose. I don't get to choose to go any way I want and still choose the ending of my story. Does that make a little bit more sense? Thank you for that question. I love the fact that somebody said, yeah, but I love that. I just don't want everybody the whole time to go, yeah, Josh, whatever you say. I want to know that you're thinking, and I appreciate the thought. You're right. I have free will, but I don't get to do whatever I want and also choose my own ending. There's some predetermined endings. Truth, reality. Yes, sir. Ooh, I love that. Isn't God also our artist? What do you think about that? Listen, I don't think evolution can explain music. I don't. I don't think there is an evolutionary reason that's plausible for something like music, art, beauty. You telling me that God isn't an artist? Absolutely. I 100% agree with you. He is our author, and he's the artist of every background canvas that we love to look at. I love it. I love it. Yes, sir. And then we'll go over there.
I was going to say, in pagan cultures, like ancient Rome and that stuff, they knew there was a god, and they did make their own gods, but they made them in their image. They were trying to be the author. They were not letting the gods control them.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you ever study the book of Isaiah, one of the things that Isaiah says over and over and over is he mocks the people who's like, look, you chopped down a tree, took part of the wood to cook your food, and then you took the other part of the wood and made something that looks like you, and now you're bowing down to it like it's your God. We're making God in our image. Remember Paul in Romans 1, worshiping the creation, not the creator. Let me tell you guys, if I could describe everything about God, he would not be a God worth worshiping. There's some things about God you're never gonna know. You just aren't. If there was something, if you could know everything about God, he would not be a God worth knowing. Somebody was very patient. Yes, sir.
So you're saying that more freedom is more chaos?
Ooh, I love that. More freedom is more chaos. I have been saying a lot of stuff like that. Maybe we're talking about how we're defining freedom. Because the Bible talks a lot about freedom in Jesus Christ. The Bible talks a lot about that kind of freedom. But again, is it the freedom to choose? God gives us free will. Maybe I can explain it this way. I used to teach elementary school before I became a preacher. I did a couple things before I became a preacher. I was one of those guys that had to do it later in life because God said, you need more time. But I used to teach elementary school, and I would tell the kids in my class, you can do whatever you want in my class. And they'd be like, oh. Really? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. You can do whatever you want in my class. But there's consequences for the choices that you make. And then there's usually when they're like, oh, man. And that's this life too. We have the freedom to do anything we want. God is never going to force you to do anything. But God is also not a quiet, silent God who said, well, I'm just going to sit back there and wait for them to mess up, and then I'll tell them what I want them to do. God has said from the beginning. I mean, even here, did Adam wake up in the garden and go, how did I get here? What's going on? No, from the beginning, God talked to Adam, told him what he expected. So, freedom to do whatever you want, yes, but God has made it clear. If you do this, these are the consequences, and chaos is the result. Does that help kind of answer your question? All right, if you want to talk more about it, we can. Other hands, other comments. I'm really excited about this. This is really great. What are some other hands? No. Oh, yes, Melody. The point that I was trying to make, God sets the limits, and when we remove the limits that the authority set up, it ends in chaos, right? The state of Texas has the authority to make roads, and they get somebody in a truck to come and paint those lines exactly where they want them to be. They have the authority to say, this is this lane, this is this lane. But if I were to come behind and remove all the lines and say, now, drivers, be free. Drive wherever you want. There are no limitations. Would that end in more safety or more chaos? More chaos. That's the point that I'm trying to say. The authority, and that's a mark of God, sets order and limitations. That's a mark of God. Oh, lots of hands. I'm excited. Yes, ma'am. Oh, the Autobahn in Germany. Yes, they drive real, 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 real fast and blow up real, 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 real good when that is done. I know I've seen your, I see your hand, but there was a fresh hand I haven't seen before. Yes. Yes, ma'am. You. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Is it kind of like releasing a wild, like a captive animal into the wild is not going to end up good?
I guess so. Maybe because they grew up in different laws, different rules. I could see that maybe. So there are certain things that they are not used to. And it's the limitations are released, and they're released out into the wild, and they don't have those same limitations, and a lot of times they have a hard time surviving. So, yeah, I could see that. Jenna. You guys like this road analogy. I'm so glad I came up with it. I'm saying again? Yeah. You're right. Okay, so you're saying, okay. Just because you remove the lines doesn't mean you remove the rules. That's actually a really great point. If I decide to remove the limits, does that change truth? Does that change reality? Are you going to run into people that say there is no truth? Yeah, you're going to run into people who will say, well, truth is just whatever you want to make it. Does that make that true? That's always a fun question. There is no absolute truth. Is that absolutely true? Are you saying that with absolute authority, that there is no absolute truth? But you're right. Just because you want something to be real doesn't mean that there isn't a law and that there isn't a consequence. That's actually exactly what we're talking about here. I can say I want freedom removed from God's laws. That doesn't mean God's laws don't apply to me. That doesn't mean I'm free from the consequences of when I choose freedom or my truth over God's truth. That actually plays in really, really good. Mark's been very, very patient, which is hard for him, I know.
So, to build on to what Bodhi was saying, in the book of Judges.
Ooh, Judges.
One of the most famous verses in Judges is the people did what was right in their own eyes. They were not looking to God for instruction. So, hypothetically, they should be very free, you know, that they get to make their own decisions. But if you look in the book of Judges, you see some horrible
Judges is just a long spiral into the toilet. It just really is. When you go through the book of Judges, the farther you get into it, they're just swirling around more and more and more. And they were, because you're right, it says over and over, the people did what they thought was right in their own eyes. Great point. Yes, sir. And then we got to move on. I'm so excited you guys are talking about this, but we've also got a time limit. Yeah. There's no reversing it. And has God been silent on what he expects from us? No. Has God been silent on what the consequences are? No. Go back to Genesis. Go back to our origin story. Did God say, don't eat of the tree, and that's all he told them? Because there was more after that. Don't eat of the tree. What was the second part? Or you're surely going to die. I know it's very ominous with all that thunder. You will die. It's like God's amen right there. So God has always been very clear from our origin story, from the upfront. These are my expectations. This is what will happen if you don't. Did you know that, for a lot of years I missed this. Did you know God actually warned Cain before he killed Abel? Yes. God went to Cain ahead of time. He said, listen, man, I know you're sad. Fix your face. Sin is crouching at the door. It wants to pounce on you. So get a hold of it before your anger leads you somewhere. God warned Cain ahead of time. Cain wanted to be the author of his own story.